Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Success Bug, the only podcast, well, maybe not the only podcast, but the most entertaining podcast that will inspire you all to escape the 9-to-5 one episode at a time. This week, I had the immense pleasure to speak with Kendra Hall, Chief Storytelling Officer of Stellar Collective and a contributing editor to Success Magazine. Kendra is one of the most sought-after keynote speakers, trusted by global brands to deliver presentations and trainings that inspire teams and individuals to better communicate the value of their company, their products, and their individuality through strategic storytelling. And Stellar Collective is a consulting firm focused on the strategic application of storytelling to today's communication challenges. Now let's learn how she went from rural Minnesota to accomplishing all of this. Without further ado, please enjoy Kendra Hall.
I mean, I went through it. I was, you know, started with nothing but a dream.
So yeah, exactly.
Speak to that.
Right. The first thing about you that like I thought was really interesting was that you grew up in Minnesota, right?
I did. Yeah. Like rural Minnesota.
Right.
The Wi-Fi app, so I have all my capacity here. Yeah. So
rural right. So what was that like growing up in rural Minnesota and like being an entrepreneur now, which I'm sure you're in a lot of major cities.
Yeah. Well, and I live in New York City now.
Yeah. Night and day, right?
Yeah. I think that, you know, I didn't know what entrepreneurship was. I didn't really even know what business was. I think if you're a kid and you grow up with business owner parents, then maybe it's more obvious to you, but for me, both of my parents were employees. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She worked until she had my brother, who was younger than me, and then she stayed home. And then once we were kind of out of the house, she went back and started working. But again, it was like in schools. My dad worked for a nonprofit. So entrepreneurship wasn't ever, there wasn't the example.
It's interesting because, you know, like you said, you never really had the exposure, which I feel like is usually the case for a lot of entrepreneurs, not most, but like, it's definitely the case for a good amount.
Yeah. And I look back and I guess, you know, when I think about it, examples weren't obvious, but it was within me. And when I look back, we lived in rural Minnesota. So my nearest neighbor was a mile away, all dirt roads.
Right.
My friends all ride. It's so funny because I'm in New York City now. And so a big thing to do is to get, rent the city bikes and ride.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, no way. There's no way I'm getting on a city bike. And my friends will say, well, why not? You know, you go to SoulCycle because I ride at SoulCycle. I'm like, oh no. When it comes to like riding your bike on a gravel road, which is really hard to do, like super good at that, but there were no cars. Like we were looking out for like turkeys running across the street. We weren't like fighting with traffic. Which was kind of scary if you think about just like rolling around on your bicycle, just you and your friend in the middle of nowhere.
Like, oh, yeah.
That sounds like the setting for a terrible story. But nevertheless, so there just wasn't there wasn't a lot to do. There wasn't. Well, so we would, my brother, sister and I would make up games like we would play at our house. And the game, this ties all the way back to when I look back at it, my favorite game to play, and I was the oldest, so I kind of got to dictate the games. The game we played was called Money.
Money.
That was the name.
Just the name. Money. You made it up.
Yeah, Money. And we would use a deck of cards, and you know, sometimes they were like cute, like kid playing cards, but you know, the six was good for $6 and the eight was good for $8. And I would always have the art shop and I would like hang my pictures, like I would paint picture or like draw pictures and hang them up in one corner of the basement. My brother always had the pet shop where he would sell the stuffed animals. My sister had a variety of different jobs.
Right.
Which is funny now, thinking back to it, she was the fortune teller for a while. but it was the exchange of like starting your business and so it's funny because then when you look back, I'm like, I think the spirit was always within me.
And right.
Then, like in high school, I wanted to go on this marching band trip, and we couldn't afford it. And so they had this like candy bar drive, and you had to sell these candy bars. And I paid for my round trip ticket to Houston to play in the Houston Thanksgiving Day parade, selling candy bars. It was definitely, marching band. I don't tell people that.
That's not in the bio at all.
But it was within me, I suppose. I didn't know that that's what it was called. But for any aspiring entrepreneurs who have those limiting beliefs that like, well, I don't really know how to, I don't know what this would look like, go back and look at your childhood. And my guess is like another thing, I remember my neighbor, the neighbor girl and I, the one that I used to ride bikes with on the dirt road. Mm-hmm. One of our early business ideas, she had a ton of dandelions in her yard. So we picked all the dandelions and put them in a wagon and wrote like dandelions $1 on it. And then wheeled the wagon all the way down to the end of her driveway, which was a mile long.
A mile long driveway. Wow.
And now keep in mind, like location.
Yeah, right.
There's nobody driving by on the street too, so we got that wrong. And then B, we were selling dead weeds, but it was still like the desire was there. So if you're thinking to yourself, I don't know if I'm made for this, I don't know if I'm built for this, go back to when you were a kid. My guess is you're gonna see traces that show you otherwise.
Right. So when you were a kid, you obviously didn't think that this was anything that you would, you know, eventually see yourself doing, obviously not selling dandelions specifically, but like something like that in terms of doing things on your own. But you look back now and it seems like that's kind of what you're doing in a way.
Yeah, I think that I also, about the same time, I discovered that I had a knack for something at a very young age. Right. So I told my, you know, so my expertise is in storytelling.
It's storytelling
in business. It's now with the new book and my new research, it's the stories that we tell ourselves.
Right. Yes.
So that's my entire life's work, if you will. Mm. And I told my first story when I was 11. So at the same time as I'm looking back at the stories in my life and seeing these like entrepreneurial endeavors, at the same time, I was also discovering this thing that I was actually uniquely good at, or maybe it wasn't even that I was super good at it. I was the only one that realized that it was something worth being good at.
Like,
I was the only one that was like, wait, if I tell stories, maybe there's like additional opportunities for me. If I write a story at the beginning of this paper, maybe I'll get a better grade. If I tell a story for this scholarship application, if I tell a story in this job interview, and so now at the time I did not think, because that job doesn't exist.
Right.
Like you can be a journalist.
Right.
This is different than that.
You were skeptical at first, right? Like your mom kind of gave you a little bit of a push.
Oh, totally. So my mom, we discovered early on that I had this like talent, and my mom kept like encouraging me to do it. And so I would tell stories at like church, and I would tell stories at my friends' siblings' birthday parties. Like it was this kind of, and they were encouraging me. I remember once they took me to this conversation between our local newscaster and someone, like she was being interviewed, and she was a big like local celebrity.
Right,
and my
parents
really wanted me to go up and talk to her afterwards, to find out about, you know, they could see that I had a talent.
That's so cool that they were able to see that, and then also just like encourage you to go after it at such a young age.
And it's so weird though, because they were encouraging me, and there were some points where I was totally into that encouragement, and sometimes where I was like,
lay off
alone, right? Like this thing where the newscaster came to our local high school.
Yeah.
The really cute boy was also there, and I wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
And so when the event ended, my mom was like, go up and talk to her name was Karen. Go up and talk to Karen. And I'm
but
like,
but he's in the back.
I'm gonna go talk to that guy. Right? So So it was kind of, I don't know. I mean, I think we all have to go through our own journey to discovering it. But then the flip side of that was my mother was also pressuring me to write more scholarships for college because we grew up very modestly. I had a great life, but it wasn't, there was not extra money laying around.
Right.
And that's for sure. So scholarships were really important. And she was all over my case to write these college scholarships. And I was like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
To rebel. This is how rebellious I am. I found out that there was a storytelling competition. And so instead I focused my energy on videotaping myself and putting it on a VHS tape. That's how you used to videotape yourself.
And this was your way of rebelling.
Yeah, this is my way of rebelling. But I was going to enter this contest instead of do these scholarships. And I think even then I was like, maybe there's a cash prize, which when it comes to storytelling, there often are not cash prizes.
Okay. It wasn't like that big of a, I'm sure it's a little bigger now, but at the time it probably wasn't even that big of a business type of thing.
And it wasn't even for business. It was it wasn't like incubator type thing. It was for a storytelling festival.
Just kind of like a spelling bee or like something like that, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so I submitted this tape to that instead of filling out my college scholarships or as many as my parents wanted me to do. And it turns out then that I ended up getting into the competition and then winning that competition, which kind of set me even more so on this storytelling path. And I think, you know, looking back, it all makes sense, but the universe all along was leaving little
hints,
breadcrumbs for me. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was, whether I was being rebellious and open or just like openly open to these moments of guidance, it definitely got me to where I am.
Yeah. And you talked about like the universe a little bit too. Like, wasn't the competition at the same place where you kind of like first got introduced to storytelling, like in a weird full circle type of way?
You are so good. Yes. So the competition happened in Tennessee. It was at East Tennessee University and the grand prize. I was hoping it was cash, remember, but it was that you got to go tell at the National Storytelling Festival.
Right.
Which in the storytelling, in the traditional storytelling world is the best of the best. Like this is the, it's not a competition. It is, it's a festival. But this is the Super Bowl of classic storytellers. It's like the, you know, you think about the moth, but this is even like pre-moth. This is not, you know, like the moth is the storytelling thing. This has been going on for decades.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I won. I got to tell at this festival. And that was really when I was sitting there and I was like a freshman in college. I went with my mom and we were sitting at this festival under these huge circus tents on these tiny little chairs. And there would be a storyteller on the stage. And they weren't telling stories to sell anything or influence in any way, but just for pure human
enjoyment.
Exactly. And connection. And I remember sitting in the audience and it was one of those moments where, again, it was like the universe. It felt like otherworldly in that I was enjoying the stories. Yes. But as the teller was telling them, I was also noticing that I was almost seeing the structure and the arc and the art of the story, almost like what's that movie? The Matrix or any of
those.
Where it's like
you're starting to see.
And I was like, wait, there is. And then I'm looking around me and I'm noticing that there are people from all different ages, all different backgrounds,
all different
colors. And they were all in it. Like they were all enjoying it and watching it. And it was another one of those moments of, wait, this is, and I was noticing that I was seeing it in a different way than anyone else saw it.
Mm. So you saw it as like something that you could do professionally.
Well, no, not even then, because keep in mind, that job didn't exist.
Yeah. So you were like, am I going to create a job? Like,
well, and that's actually what happened.
Yeah.
So my mom and I were in the car, the shuttle van going yeah. back to the airport. And she was like, you know, you could really do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this could be a career path for you. Now, I feel like it's important that I say here, I was a freshman in college.
Yeah.
I grew up in rural Minnesota, you know, lots of handmade, all these, you know, and I wanted to make money.
Yeah, okay?
So let's not forget, like, that was my first game. Like it wasn't like, I want to travel around to, because you don't make money traveling around.
The filling and all, but that wasn't the goal for you at the time.
Yeah, I wanted to wear high heels. Mm. I wanted to wear pencil skirts. Mm.
You wanted it all.
Job. Yes. And that's what I thought. To have those things, I thought I needed a corporate job.
Right.
That's what I thought. And so when my mom's like, you could do this, I'm like, I'm not going to, because I knew what these, because I asked the storyteller, so what does it look like to be a professional storyteller? And they were like, well, you need a program for first through third graders, and then you need a program for, you know, fourth through fifth or whatever it was. And that's great for some people, but I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. That didn't interest you at all, like children?
No.
It wouldn't interest me either.
it was so, but like I had done that. I did that when I was in high school. I would go back and tell at my elementary school because mm-hmm. they knew me as the storyteller. So even then, all I saw was the job that was there. And it was an entrepreneurial job. Like these storytellers work so hard it's incredible. I just knew it wasn't the job for me. And so I assumed there wasn't a job there. It wasn't much later in my corporate job of marketing, sales.
Right.
Where I was like, wait, I was doing volunteer work for my local nonprofits. And I'm like, well, how is everybody missing this?
Yeah. That,
like the thing you should be doing is
not that big
stories. Mm. I don't understand how you keep doing all these other things when stories are what you need.
Right.
That's when I started realizing that maybe I could make my own career.
Right. And about how old were you then? Was that like 2 years removed from college?
I had finished graduate school.
Okay. Wow.
I was like 25, 26 ish. Right. And I worked at that job for 5 years, 6 years.
Right.
And I got married and I was just starting to feel like there's this friction point where I was thinking to myself, the thing that I'm best at isn't really a place for it here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a leap of faith in that moment.
Where, yeah.
And it was some serious conversations between my husband and I.
Yeah.
I was bringing in 50% of our family revenue. We didn't have kids yet, but mm-hmm. and it was really undefined what becoming a storyteller would look
like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what did that conversation even go like? Because I know in your head, you knew exactly what you had in mind, but to explain that is probably hard to hear on the other end, right?
Well, I would even say, because I knew that what I was good at was storytelling.
Yeah.
But it still wasn't clear how to turn that into something that could sustain a family. And that was also a goal of mine. Like, again, remember, I wanted to make money. I didn't
want
it to be like a hobby. I wanted it to provide as much income as I was making at the
as much or more, right?
Hired me. Exactly. Exactly. And so, now the good news was my partner, my husband, mm-hmm. Was another one of the guides along the journey. He saw way early on that this was something special.
Right.
And so he was a supporter of that, but it really was, it was a leap of faith for both of us.
Yeah.
And so those conversations took like going over our financials. Like I remember we canceled Netflix back when you ordered the DVDs.
Oh, like, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
We canceled Netflix. Mm-hmm. We sold the car that I had bought on, like, that I had financed to the hilt that I couldn't even afford in the first place. Like, we made some very, I think people forget that at the core of really entrepreneurship is also fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Like, how, because to leave such a steady income, even though, you know, it ties you to like 40, 45 hours of your, you know, your week, but still it's steady income. Like, what is it like to leave that, and what, like, adjustments did you have to make overall?
Yeah, that was, I mean, we were cutting back, and we also made sure that we were pretty sure that I could, like, stay on in like a consulting role.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
As I, you know, so that there could be some bridge to, so not letting it all go right away. But then it really did, once we cut back as much as we could cut back, and we lived pretty modestly. It's not like we're not a keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah. You weren't like going
kind of people. We're like, because we had something more that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so it wasn't hard in terms of lifestyle choices. I mean, yeah, we were literally giving up like Netflix and maybe like giving up, like postponing some dreams. My husband does real estate investment. Yeah. And so it meant kind of postponing building that portfolio so that we could build this portfolio, which was
right. And it turned out to be a good investment.
And that was, and I think it was also great because we had those very honest conversations.
Yeah.
But we were never, it was never like an adversary thing because he wasn't like, well, you owe me, right?
Oh, like, yeah. It's like, said, we're in this together.
Yeah. Like, it was like, and I'm like, and he also knew that I was going to do whatever it took to make it happen, because this really was, albeit a very foggy dream, it was a dream for me.
Right.
So I was very committed to that, and he knew he could trust that.
Right. And regardless, like you said, you knew that it was, even if it didn't work out, like, you could kind of rest easy knowing that you gave it everything you had. Exactly. It did work out. But
it ended up working out. Yeah.
But how long did it actually take for you to start seeing at least a little bit of traction? Not even like to where you are now necessarily, but just, you know, enough for you to be like, okay, we can maybe relax a little bit.
Yeah, it was. Well, the funny thing was, so we decided, we're like, okay, we're making this change. We're doing this. I went in, I talked to my boss, you know, I explained everything. I'm going to be leaving. We found out a week later that I was pregnant with our first child.
Wow.
And so it was like,
the plot thickens.
Okay. Right. Like, how do you, and so then honestly, what kind of happened is I was still kind of trying to figure out, because it was really unclear. It would have been one thing if I had already had a business plan, but I didn't, it was so nebulous. So even while I was pregnant, then I was testing out different things. For a while, I was writing wedding stories for people. Mm-hmm. Like, I would interview the bride and I would interview the groom separately. And then I would write their love story from their two different perspectives.
Wow.
And I spent hours doing this, and I charged $100. And again, I was like, gosh, this isn't enough to make money off of. And then I started like volunteering, but then it turned into like a paid position with some nonprofits to help them tell their stories. And then it was a lot of
adjustments.
Yeah. It was a lot of experimentation, honestly. And I think that is something when I left my job, I want to go back to that. We planned it as if, like, what if I made no money?
Yeah.
For 5 years.
Are we okay with that? Like, can we,
like, what if I made $0? Mm-hmm. We had to be okay with that.
Right.
And so there was a lot of experimentation. So I had my son, and then I had my daughter shortly thereafter. I was at home raising two kids under two. I was trying to put together like a storytelling training. Again, there was a whole ton of experimentation. And I remember, so I left my job in 2010. Somebody reached out. So it would have been 2014 by a stroke of luck. But I think luck favors the prepared. Like, I've been working, trying to figure out how to make this work and how to make this happen. Trying lots of different things. And it was 2014 by a stroke of luck, an organization reached out and said, would you come speak at our conference? What do you charge? And I was like, I think I said like, oh, I charge $2,000 for a keynote speech.
Right.
And I mean, I didn't know. And they were like, you have $1,000.
They pulled it out.
Okay, I'll do it.
And that was it. That was it. The first negotiation. He was like, yeah, sure.
But yeah, I was like, okay, what do I, right? And so I ended up in Las Vegas. I gave my first keynote speech, which I hadn't really done before. I'd done speaking in my sales job. I was on the speech team. Obviously, I was a storyteller. I knew how to do all that. Mm-hmm. But I remember giving that first keynote speech and it going really well. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, standing in my hotel room all by myself, staring out the window and thinking, maybe I could do this for my family. Like, maybe this is the path.
And how did he even find you? Like, were you promoting yourself a lot online? Like, was it word of mouth?
Again, it was like a series of fortunate events. And I think this is an important thing is I think it's really easy when you're pursuing something new or something that you've made up yourself.
Yeah.
Something that I see a lot of people get that struggle with is how much should I charge? How much should I charge?
Yeah.
How much should I charge? And it's really important that you do value yourself. And I think there are different, because now like, yeah, we're very strict about what I do for what, because you have to be like, that's the nature of where I am right now. But back then,
You started like you said, you were writing wedding stories for hours, charging $100.
I mean, I was getting paid like a nickel an hour. Really,
yeah.
If you think about it. And then I was doing other work that was completely for free, like behind the scenes, a ton of work, but it was making me better at what I did.
Right.
It was making it clearer what value I could add to the marketplace without the pressure of having to deliver that value because they're paying you for it. And there's something really powerful in that. Like, I just had permission to kind of figure this out. And so what had happened was, is I was doing some work behind the scenes for someone. I wasn't being paid. Mm-hmm. And they had a connection to Success Magazine. Right. And this is over a decade ago.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize.
No, like a long time ago, and said, hey, they're doing a piece about something. I think a few comments about storytelling from you would be great for this little sidebar. Can you put that together? And it was like, but I need it by 5 p.m. today. And it was like 2 p.m. And so I went home and I like wrote up a few talking points about finding your story.
Yeah. And
they published it in Success. It was just a little, it was like
five little write up.
Yeah. And that was it. But an organ, and I've never it's been
huge traffic though. I gotta imagine, right?
Well, and never since then have I, for an article that I've written in Success Magazine, can we directly trace it back to someone saying, I want to hire her to speak. It was, and I've written a lot more for Success. I mean, I'm the chief storytelling officer now.
Yeah.
Magazine, you know, over a decade later, it's just meant to be. And I think it was, my heart was in the right place. My spirit was in the right place. I was doing good work. I was open to possibility and it found me. And then one organization saw that little write-up, hired me to speak. I met another keynote speaker there and I bought him a coffee afterwards and was like, can you tell me how you, and he's like, yeah, this is, I mean, I have friends that make X, Y, make millions a year.
Oh, so that's where it kind of started to connect and the connection started forming.
And then I was like, wait, I could do that.
You can charge that much?
I know. Well, I'm like, I gotta get there. And then, then that's when the hustle really started because I had like a more defined goal.
Right. Okay. So you worked in marketing and you were VP of sales at one point. So it's not like you didn't have a background corporately. We talked about that a little bit. Did that help you at all in terms of when you started this, or was it kind of just like, you know what? It was a great experience, but it didn't really contribute to anything I've done post.
you know, I think what it, because ultimately what really was is that thing that I was good at since I was a child.
Yeah.
I think where those titles may have helped me mm-hmm. was that when I was first positioning myself as a storyteller, and again, this was, you know, many years ago.
Yeah.
And storytelling has only grown in relevance and popularity.
Yeah, for sure. So,
I like to think that I participated in that growth, but I'm not going to take credit. I think I like to.
Yeah. You pioneered it.
Pretty flag waver for the storytelling movement. But I think those titles just. So maybe those titles helped build my credibility as people saw me from the outside, right?
And they'd be like,
oh, okay, well, she was in sales, she was in marketing. Fine, check, check. But maybe they didn't even care about that. I think that for me at the time, having those two little boxes checked helped give me a little bit more confidence that I was worthy of the stages, the audiences, the things that were being asked of me.
Right. So you kind of looked at it as more of a stepping stone to what you actually wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So your company is Stellar Collective now. Was it called that at the time or was it just, you know, freelance work?
No. And even now, Stellar Collective, like we're still evolving. We're still figuring out what can I do?
Okay.
What do I love doing? Because just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do something.
Right.
And so Kendra Hall has always kind of been the brand. And then we started Stellar Collective which is the word storyteller kind of smushed together, Stellar Collective, to house any growth expansion that goes beyond me and my personal brand.
Right. Yeah. So that makes sense. And I think the coolest part about it is that you mentioned that you see like communication challenges with a lot of like companies and brands. Would you say that like most companies are bad at telling their stories, or they could just really improve it? Or is it just like in your head, is it like, wow, this could just be like so much better. This is terrible.
For the most part, I just don't think that they do tell stories.
Okay.
I think that the definition of what a story is off in business.
Right.
And you have to remember, like, I didn't come to business storytelling from a business background. Like,
right.
I came to business and storytelling as a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And so
and then pivoted into that.
Exactly. And I'm like, wait, storytelling works in business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, in its rise to buzzword and everyone's saying, but they'll be like, this is our story. We believe in excellence and commitment to our customers. If I were to read that story to my kids at bedtime, they'd be pissed.
They wouldn't fall asleep. They'd just be mad.
Yeah. They'd be like, no, that is not. And so it's, there isn't like a story is a story.
Yeah. It's interesting when you say it out loud, because when you said it out loud, I started laughing. But like, if I read that now, I'd probably be like, oh, that's typical of like a
brand story. And that's what they say. They'll put even like on the website, like our story. And then you open it and it's like, we have been serving the people. And I'm like, that's not a story. That has, you can't call, it isn't that you call it a story and then that makes it a story. It needs to be a story.
Right.
Call it a story. So I really think that for the most part, businesses miss it entirely. And when it comes to entrepreneurship, I mean, you can see the companies that really leaned in their story for better or worse.
Right.
I mean, the ability to, you know, Airbnb, it was all about their story.
Yeah.
You know, like any of the big ones, you know,
kind of how it started and
their story.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and don't assume that that was just, that's not a coincidence. That's how it works essentially.
Right.
So for entrepreneurs, like your greatest strength, especially as you're just getting started, is your story.
Mm-hmm.
Because your story will be the thing that expresses your passion and legitimizes what you offer, what you do.
Right. So what impact do you think that, you know, telling and being so public and thorough about your story has on like people who perceive your brand or perceive, you know, your company?
Yeah. You know what? That's a great question, because I don't officially know.
Yeah. But you know, it's something.
Yeah, I know that it's working.
Yes.
At least to some degree. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, I was just doing an interview yesterday with another organization, and the woman was like, I just feel like I know you. And that is a good thing.
It is. Yeah.
And especially now when we do have so much access to information, and we feel like we should know you, and you know, that's the buzzwords of authenticity and vulnerability.
Yeah.
What's at the core is we want to do business with people. We don't want to do business with business. We want to do business with people,
right?
And people that we feel like we know, and who we, and then if we know them, we feel like we like them. And then if we like them, we feel like we can trust them. I mean, it's right. All the essential components of successful business, and you can accomplish all of those things by just being generous with telling your stories and telling the stories of your team and telling the stories of when things, I just got ready to post. And we have so many opportunities to do that. We have opportunities on podcasts. We have opportunities on blog posts. We have opportunities on social media. I was just putting together my post for today and like writing captions for Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is can feel like a necessary evil. But for me, I've just seen it as like, storytelling opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what story can I tell today? And so I actually told the story of when I was launching my first book, because I have my second book where we just entered the pre-order phase of it. And the problem is when you launch a book, the author doesn't get the official hardcover copies with the cover on it until just like a few weeks before the book comes out.
Interesting.
You need to start promoting the book with like photos and marketing material and all these things months in advance. Right. Well, how do you do that if you don't actually have the book?
Yeah.
So with my first book, Stories That Stick, Michael, he and I've always worked together, printed the cover, just like printed a mock-up of the cover. And when the mock-up came, we wrapped it for a photo shoot, but we wrapped it around another book. And I chose a storytelling book that I was, if I'm honest, like a little envious of. Like it had done well. I felt like it didn't really cover everything that it needed to cover, right?
Yeah. So which is good in your head. It's like I can attack certain things, right?
But I had this kind of like, I don't know, it's good to have a little healthy competition, and even if it's in your own mind. So I wrapped the cover of my book around this actual book.
I didn't it was that book.
I didn't have a book yet.
Okay.
So I wrapped it around. So we took all these photos. So in all of these photos of me holding my book, and we did it out on the streets of New York. So I'm standing in the middle of the street. I'm standing next to the subway, and people would walk by and say, "Oh my gosh, congratulations on your book." And I know that what's on the pages isn't mine. Like it's another person's book. And then now with this new book coming out, we did the same thing, printed a mock-up cover. It came. And the moment of like full circle pride when I had to wrap that cover around a book, and it was my own book. I wrapped it around.
Oh, you wrapped it around your book this time. Book. Yeah.
I wrapped it around my first book. So now when you
poetic.
Open it, like, yeah, it isn't the new book yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the old one. It was. And so that's my story for social media. And
you communicate that, and then people see that and they trust you more, and they see you as a person and not a business.
Exactly. And then they become a part of it. And I think that's a key part of entrepreneurship too. And this isn't just a marketing strategy. Like you need people. You can't do this. Like entrepreneurship can be a lonely, lonely business.
Yeah.
A lonely path, if you will. And you need people to feel like they're a part of your journey. You need it so that it goes well. Right. I mean, they're going to be the ones that make your business go, but you also need it for yourself.
Right. No, that makes a total sense. And, you know, speaking about the book, I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet. I honestly bought the Kindle version, but the four things that I did see were, you know, there were four different types of stories. Yep. There was the value story, the founder story, the customer story, and the purpose story.
Yep. That's right.
So what would you say is the most important in your eyes, or are they all kind of equally important?
I wouldn't say they're equally important. It kind of depends on who you are.
Right.
So if you are...
Okay. So it's situational depending on what type of business you're like. Right.
Exactly. So if you're just getting started or you're thinking about getting started, probably the most important story for you is the founder story. And that is finding the story that really says why you are the person for this job that you've created. I mean, obviously it's not a job interview, but when you first discovered the power of what you do or why you are so passionate, and they can be stories that, you know, go all the way back to fifth grade. That's my first story. They can be stories that were, you know, maybe you saw something happen. You can think of it as there had to be a better way story.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that's one of the first stories you need to have. And you can put it on your website. You can put it somehow in like a really abbreviated form on your business card. If you have it, it should be going out on your social media. You should film a video about it. Like the founder story, when you're just getting started, that's a key story to have. And then right after that is the value story, which is your sales and marketing story, are the stories that express the value of what they offer. They're the stories that answer the question of why do I even need this? They're the stories that answer the objections of, you know, sometimes your biggest obstacle is just status quo. Somebody doesn't want to switch. Like if you are someone who's created a better way, but I mean, my old way isn't perfect, but I kind of want to stick with it. Yeah. Anyway, right? Like you need a story that illustrates the value of making that switch. So I would say the first two most important stories for entrepreneurs are the founder story, the value story. As your team grows,
right,
the purpose story becomes more important. And then the customer story is how you start. It's similar to the value story, except it's told through the voice of your customers.
Oh, interesting.
And that's how you build credibility for what it is that you offer.
Right. I can see why they're like situational rather than, you know, different types. And, you know, that makes a ton of sense. But something that I had heard from other entrepreneurs is that a lot of people are like old school, you know, CEOs, high level executives don't really, they're kind of stuck in their ways in a way, not super negative, but do some people react negatively to, you know, the idea of like, you know, telling their story when they're so stuck in the mold of like, our story is that we're committed to health and safety and XYZ rather than like actually talking about what they did to start the business?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there was an arm of my business for a while that was focused on consulting. So I would do exactly that. I would go in and work with the CEO, or I would work with the product launch team or the marketing team to help companies tell their stories. And in some ways it was amazing. We had some incredible successes, and in many other ways it was just
there's not going anywhere.
It just wasn't the right, and I think ultimately, and I think this is an important thing as you're going forward, it just wasn't a good fit for me right now. Like my time and energy trying to convince them that this was the right way to go, and working on their stories and finding their stories and writing their stories, or, you know, however I could have gone in and then scaled that up for me, it just wasn't. And so I only take on very, very, very few projects in that way, because it just wasn't a good, there are people who do a version of that. And you know what, just because you can do things doesn't mean it's necessarily
you have to do them all. Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, that makes sense. I mean, like, you want to work with people who are receptive and are, you know, it's easier to work with when you, especially when you have options, like I'm, like you do, it's like, it makes sense to make the most of your time. Right.
Yeah. And I was always very aware of like, wait, why doesn't this feel right to me? And yeah, it just made more sense to spend more time and energy on the things that I am uniquely good at, which is, you know, speaking, writing, then try to fit a square peg through a round hole.
Right. That's a great analogy.
It's not to say that it'll never happen again, but I feel like you can get really caught up in the things that in like, oh, you're leaving money on the table. You'll hear that a lot. Like, oh, you're leaving money on the table. And I'm like, you know what? Let's leave it there for a while. Chances are it'll be there when I get back. I'm not going to go take care of the money that's like blowing in the air right now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where, you know,
It's kind of like a narrow-minded type of view.
Yeah.
So from your perspective overall, I mean, you have one of the more unique and like very valuable perspectives because you actually did have a full-time job, worked there for quite some time, and then left for to start your own business. For when you look back on your journey and you look back on what you've been able to do, like what would you say to somebody who might honestly be in the same position or something similar where they're thinking of starting something on their own, but there are obstacles, whether it be, you know, people around them, a job that they're afraid to leave, which, you know, you obviously did, or anything else?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot that I would say. First of all, I would say don't do anything rash.
Yeah.
Because I do think that there's enough pressure to make a dream come true. You don't then need to add the chaos that comes with rash decisions to it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So take your time, like make those and be working in the background of like, okay, what is this? Cause you know, when I think back while I was working full time, I was writing regular blogs on MySpace, by the way. That's
wow. Throwback.
But I was still a student of I was still kind of investigating. I was open-minded, but it wasn't like I woke up one morning and thought I should be a storyteller. I'm quitting my job. That would have been a terrible decision. I would have freaked out. I would have started looking for a new job a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of planning involved.
Yeah. And be okay with that. That doesn't mean that you're failing at pursuing your new thing. It means you're being a responsible grown up, you know, like that's part of it. And then, I think that, you know, people are going to doubt you and they are going to tell you you're crazy or making a bad choice, or you're going to share your idea with them and they're not going to get it. I just read somewhere, probably on social media, or maybe in Success Magazine. I don't even know. I read it somewhere where somebody said, don't take criticism from someone who you wouldn't take advice from.
Interesting.
But the flip side of that is it's easy to be like, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to do this anyway. Mm-hmm. But if there are people who you value their advice, like you think that they are wise, you think that they've done something right, and they give you feedback that isn't go get them, you got this. And their feedback is, well, maybe
pump the brakes a little bit.
So listen to that. Mm-hmm. You know, like if somebody gives you advice and they also think you would trust their advice if they gave it to you. And then they also say, you know, I think you should think about doing this, and that's something to really listen to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, ultimately, you get to make your own choice and you get to decide, because again, different people's advice in different scenarios. Like I listen to my dad's advice.
Yeah.
My dad would want me to stay at the job and provide, you know, make sure. So, you know,
it's like you don't go too deep into either. You want to like have like a balance.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
And I feel like some people, like you said, like for somebody in your circle who might say, hey, maybe, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. I think a lot of people, you know, might immediately retreat to like, oh, they're being negative. Like, you know, they're not supporting my dream. But like, it seems like you kind of have a different point of view on that.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. There are people who are definitely not going to want you to pursue your dream.
Oh, yeah.
Because it reflects poorly on them. But there are some people who are like, hey, maybe you should Like, I had a lot of mentors say, you know, like one person was like, I really think that you need to. Oh, one mentor said to me as I was putting together all my marketing material for my keynote speaking, he was like, really, the storyteller is trying to sell storytelling without telling a single story. And I had committed my own crime. I was like, Kendra is an engaging, inspiring, energetic. Oh, you did it. You know? Yeah, I did it. So if I can make that mistake, certainly you can make that mistake. But thank God I had somebody whose opinion I trusted say, like, this is a huge, because you don't want people just being like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. Because that's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, a bunch of yes people. It's yeah, not what exactly. You want to surround yourself with. Now, that makes sense. I mean, you know, overall, Kendra, like I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I honestly, I can't thank you enough for coming on to the show. Like, I think everybody listening got a ton of value out of this. I mean, talking about like your story, and especially in value to just like us or like anybody listening, I think is super important, especially for people who are trying to start their own business, especially the value and the found, like starting in that spot, I think is, you know, so important to hear. And you know, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and I really appreciate all the time and all the info you dropped for us.
Oh my gosh. I love being able to talk about this from like this side of it. And I think if there's anything that I would wrap up with, it would be, you know, looking back now, if you were to look at what I do and where I am,
yeah.
You'd be like, oh yeah, it's obviously her career is a storyteller. Like, of course that's but it was not obvious. It wasn't an obvious thing. I mean, the skill was there, but what that actually looked like as a career was not an obvious thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, it was the most random. So if you're someone that has this like very unobvious idea, that doesn't mean that it's not something you should pursue. It could just mean that you are the exact person to pursue it, and you're the
only one,
you know? Yeah.
Create your own position.
Exactly. I'm so grateful to have been able to offer any thoughts to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously what we love to do at the end is, you know, I know you have a book that's out recently and you have a ton of content out. Anything that you want to promote right now, you know, feel free. I'm sure everybody would love to check that out too.
Of course. Well, my first book is all about storytelling in business. You mentioned those four stories. It go into how to craft stories, how to find your story, where to tell your story. It's really like the beginner's guide to storytelling in business. That book is called Stories That Stick. It's available wherever books are sold. And then my new book that is just now in pre-order, you can get access to that by going to ChooseYourStoryChangeYourLife.com. This new book is all about the stories that we tell ourselves. And as entrepreneurs, this is almost more important than the stories you tell outwardly. We're constantly telling ourselves stories about what we are capable of, what we should do, you know, when we're dreaming too big or why we should hold back, and gaining control over the internal storytelling that's happening between your own two ears is an essential part of entrepreneurial success. So that book is available for pre-order now. It comes out in January. Ooh. And if you go to ChooseYourStoryChangeYourLife.com, there's a bunch of bonuses there too. So pre-order it, upload your info, and I will send you some other great additional things as we're leading up to the launch.
Oh, beautiful. And I can't wait to read it. I can't thank you so much again for, you know, coming on the show, and can't wait to see all the great things you guys are going to continue to do.
Thank you.
And that will do it. A huge shout out and a huge thank you to Kendra Hall for coming onto the show. The power of storytelling is something that we all need to master if we ever want to be successful. I know I learned a ton from that. We all have our stories that we want to share, but just might not know how. So if that's the case, feel free to buy Kendra's book and read up on all of her work on Success Magazine if you want to learn more. But I will see you all next Friday. We'll be covering the net worth of another successful celebrity or entrepreneur. You're not going to want to miss it. Peace out.